Welcome to Tuned to Yesterday, broadcasting programs from radio's golden age. I'm your host, Mark LeVonier, delivering an hour of horror. Later on, it's Inner Sanctum from 1949, but right now, a 1944 broadcast of The Weird Circle. This story, released by NBC syndication, called The Strange Judgment.
By what token can man live after death?
By his works. Poe, de Maupassant, Balzac, these great writers of horror stories live on. Listen to The Weird Circle.
Out of the past, phantoms of a world gone by speak again the immortal tale, The Strange Judgment.
Someone is on the trail below. Now they are coming closer, pointing at my cave, here so high above the sea, at the pile of moss which is my bed, and the granite slab my table, the stoneware pitcher, the loaf of dry bread. Soon they will turn. See now, just like the others, they are going back down the trail, like the village folk who go to the marketplace by another trail so as to avoid me. They will tell others about me, about the fearful old man in the cave above the sea with his little wooden cross, ascetic old man with bloodshot eyes. They do not know the real reason I am here. That once many years ago, before I took a vow to do penance in this prison in the open air, I lived down there on the little islet near the salt marshes at Guérande, lived with my wife Brouin and fished. Now only my niece Perrotte comes to me every morning, bringing me bread and talks to me. But I cannot answer. I can talk to no one, dare only to kiss her forehead. But then, so long ago, I had many friends. These shaggy hands do not show it, but I was strong then, and the muscles of my body were hard. I could fish with the best of them.
Ah, the Pierre Compromet has the devil's own luck.
He left no sardines for us others.
Can I help it that I know where fishes play, huh?
Ah, look at your name.
So?
Compromet!
Meaning the sea bends to your will.
It's in our family. We know our trade,
oh,
huh?
Oh, devil's luck, I call it.
Pierre.
Maybe.
Pierre.
Oh, there is my wife.
Pierre, I'm so glad you're back.
Hello, my wife.
Pierre, I've got good news for you.
And I have something to tell you. Come now, let us walk up the path to the house together, eh?
You look so happy, darling.
I should be. We have made money, my chérie. We can afford a bigger vessel.
Oh, please, no, Pierre.
But the sardine fishery has brought us money. The boats we have are only small. With a bigger boat, I could go cod fishing.
I don't know. You'd be away so long. I love you so much, Pierre. The days and nights are so long when you're at sea.
Then I shall stop going for sardines.
No, I don't want that.
I know, I know. Cod fishing is too long to be away.
I think so.
Then I shall stick to the sardines and a little deep sea trade for the dealers, huh?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, that was a good haul this trip. Let me see. Here, look at this account. With the house and the island, the boats, and now this new catch. Well, one more trip and we will be worth money.
Much money?
12,000 livres, I should say.
Good.
Of course it is good. What woman in the village...
Oh, I mean because we'll need a little more now.
Sherry, what do you mean?
Remember how we talked about a little one?
I remember. Oh, no. You mean...
Mm-hmm.
Brouin. Oh, you sweet one. Maybe it will be a son, eh?
A son. Yes, a son.
And we'll name him Jacques.
Yes.
And when he is old enough... We'll take him to the carnival.
Yes, we'll take him to the carnival.
That is enough candy for today, Jacques.
No, no, Papa. I want that peppermint.
No, no, Jacques.
Let him have it, Papa.
Brouin, you are spoiling your boy. Here, please. Let me have half a dozen peppermint sticks. That ought to satisfy.
want the doll. I want the gun.
But you are too young, little Jean.
Next year, the gun, maybe. Take the doll.
No, I want the gun. I want the gun.
You see, Bruin, he has a will of his own, that boy. Oh, I'll buy that gun there, please.
I'm afraid, Pierre.
There it is, Papa, in that window. What a beautiful bicycle.
Pierre.
But, Mother, a boy of his age should have a bicycle.
The others in the village have none.
How now? Our Jacques is no ordinary boy. Here, this way. Step into the store with me. I will buy it for you now.
Pierre, we're spoiling him. He's so young and he wants so much. We're spoiling him dreadfully.
Oh, he will outgrow it. He is only 6. Wait until he is 10. He will not be spoiled when he is 10. Where is Jacques?
Upstairs.
Oh, Jacques?
I sent him upstairs.
Why, Bruin?
He's been fighting again. He all but killed Montreux's son.
Oh. Why do you weep, Bruin?
They're saying in the village he put out Pugot's little girl's eye.
Nonsense. In the village they will talk about anything. Oh, but he will be one for the girls, that Jacques.
That isn't all. Last week the fowls, he twisted their necks just for fun. Such things make one bloodthirsty like a weasel.
Oh, it is nothing, Bruin. Do not weep, please. He is young. He is only 10. Wait till he grows older. He will be the perfect gentleman when he is 15. Wait and see.
Come on, sit down to supper, Pierre.
Ah, the stew, it smells good.
Pierre.
Where is Jacques, eh?
I don't know. Guerin, maybe, or Savenay. He's getting a little wild, Pierre.
Oh, a boy of 15 needs to be active. It is natural.
Pierre. Remember the time you walked 20 leagues to repay a franc the dealer had overpaid you?
Yeah, that was a walk, eh?
Why isn't Jacques like that?
I don't... You mean... Has our Jacques taken money?
A little. I had a few coins and a jug in the cellar. Well, a young fellow needs money to carry on, I suppose.
But that is not right. No, that is not right. Oh, he's still young. Maybe in a year or two he will be settled. Maybe he will not be so wild. Who knows? Maybe he will calm down. Bruin, what is it, chérie? This table, it is strange. What has happened to the other?
Oh, Pierre.
This furniture.
I know.
Oh, the furniture, it is not our stuff. What happened to it? Rowana, what happened to our furniture?
Look in the wardrobes, too, and in the closet.
The linens, they are gone.
The sheets, everything.
Where has this chair come from?
Neighbors, they loaned it to me.
You have traded our furniture?
No, Pierre, no.
Then what has become of it?
I tried to stop him. He wouldn't listen to me.
Jacques, eh? He sold it. Didn't he? Answer me, Rowana.
Yes, I tried to stop him, but I couldn't.
Where did he go?
To the cafe in town, I think. But it's late. He should be back soon. Oh, Pierre, what should we do with him?
I do not know. Imagine a youth of 17 selling his family's own furniture so that he may carouse in a cafe.
Maybe he isn't really bad. Maybe he just needs someone to talk to him.
Jacques. Is that you?
Yes, it's me.
Where have you been, Jacques?
Oh, at the cafe. Is it your business to know?
Your mother and I want to talk to you, Jacques.
All right. Make it quick.
Jacques, listen to your father now.
Son, you are old enough to make your own way.
You mean work?
And what is so wrong in earning your bread with your hands, eh?
Fishing. I cannot stand the smell.
If one can handle the money that comes from fish, it is not too much to stand their smell, Jacques.
Cambremais have always been men of the sea.
It is not too much to ask of my son.
No. Maybe it is better if I go away.
Jacques.
No, son, that is not what we meant.
It's just that times are getting a little harder. There's your uncle's family to think of. Joseph's wife is sick, and the little girl, Perrotte, needs a doctor's care. It all takes money.
Well, let them pay their own way.
Have a care, Jacques.
It is true.
He is my brother. One must be loyal to his kin, whatever.
And I say I am closer than your brother. Charity begins at home. If you are giving any money, then why not give it to me?
We're already half poor from all your carryings
on.
Oh,
say nothing of that, Cherie.
But all you are asking of him is to lend a hand with the fishing, to earn the bread he eats and the money he spends.
Will you be quiet, woman? You have put my father up to this.
Have a care, Jacques. You are talking to your mother.
Well, if it had not been for her, nothing would have been said about the furniture. Meddling old woman.
Silence!
No!
Pierre, don't you kill him!
Get up, Jacques.
His head is cut. Suppose you've killed him.
Two a.m. So late, and I'm so tired.
Rouen, is that you?
Yes. Where are you?
In bed.
So dark.
Have you been in Jacques' room? Huh?
Yes.
How is he now?
A little better. That was a bad beating you gave him.
He should not have spoken to you that way.
Oh, I didn't mind, really. But it was unkind the way he spoke of Joseph and his family. Of little Perrot. How's the mother, by the way?
No better. I fear for her.
Bad. So tired.
Come to bed, Brouin.
Yes, I will. Good night.
Good night. Ah, the bed feels good tonight.
Pierre.
What is it?
There's someone in the room. A thief.
Who is it? Who is it, I say?
Light the candle, Pierre.
Yes.
Over that way. There.
Jacques!
Jacques!
Jacques, what are you doing here?
Why aren't you in bed, son?
Answer me, Jacques. What are you doing in this room?
Yes. What's that in his hand?
Stay where you are. Both of you.
It looks like... Hold the light higher, Pierre.
Yes.
It's a knife!
Jacques, what are you doing with that knife?
Stand back. Don't come near me.
Put down that knife. You would murder us in our beds.
Stand back, I warn you.
Give me the knife, Jacques. You wouldn't dare stab your own mother.
I'll stab anybody. Anybody. Do you hear? Anybody.
Brouin, where are you? Oh, there you are.
You're home early, Pierre.
The fish are running poorly. Where have you been?
At your brother's.
Oh, how is his wife today?
Worse.
And little Perrot?
She still needs nursing.
Oh. I saw Joseph at the fishery on the way home. They need more money.
We're running low. But what we have, we share.
You're a kind one, Brouin. Doctors and medicines for the sick, that always takes money. And Perrot, she's such a tiny thing and so helpless.
I've fixed it so that later on she'll not be so bad off.
What do you mean?
In my mattress, I've sewed a Spanish doubloon wrapped in paper. I've written on the paper for Perrot, so that there's no mistake as to whose it is.
Where is Jacques?
On another spree.
With what?
I don't know. He asked me for money, but as you told me, I refused him another centime.
He must learn to work for what he gets. I would like to visit my brother's place before supper.
Look out, Pierre!
What is this, Brouin?
Water for my flowers. This dry spell, you know.
But must it stand in the doorway?
Go along to your brother's. Supper in an hour.
Oh, wait. Who is that coming up the path? Look through the window.
Oh, it's Father Gabot, the rector from Pyrioc.
I will let him in.
I wonder why he comes now.
Oh, good day, Father.
Good day. I come with sad news, my friend.
Sad news? Joseph's wife?
The fever. It was too much for her. She passed away.
Joseph will fish with me tomorrow.
Sardines running any better?
Not yet. A break in the weather would be good.
For my garden, too.
It will be harder taking Joseph on this way.
We'll manage.
If Jacques would only lend a hand. More hands than needed in hard times. Every little catch helps.
As long as there are fish for you to catch, we'll eat.
But a man needs meat now and again. Is that you, Brouin?
Yes. Came down to the shore because I couldn't wait. I had something to tell you.
I have something to tell you.
Yeah.
Look.
Look at this paper. I found it floating at the shore.
My handwriting.
For Perrot, it says.
You know, then.
The Spanish doubloon. Where is it?
I don't know, Pierre. I looked for it this afternoon. I thought I'd take it to a safer place or give it to Perrot now when she needs it so much. But
yes.
It was not in the mattress.
Jacques. He found your hiding place.
Where are you going?
I'm going to the cafe to find Jacques. To see if he took the coin. Go up to the house, Brouin. Go up and wait for me. Florent. Have you seen my son, Jacques?
He is in there, in the billiard room.
Has he paid his score yet?
Yes.
Let me see with what he has paid you.
Certainly. No, where is it? Oh, this coin, Pierre.
My son paid you with that, eh?
But naturally.
No, I'll take it. Here is silver for it. You see, there is a cross marked on the coin. I have sentimental reasons for keeping it.
I understand.
You did not tell my son I was here.
Well, of course not. I thought...
That is good.
Thank you, Pierre.
I thank you, Florent.
Au revoir.
Au revoir.
Did you find him, Pierre?
Yes.
Where?
At Florent's cafe.
And the coin. Did you find the coin?
Look, is this it?
Yes. It has a cross on it.
Right.
Does he know?
No. Florent brought it to me secretly after Jacques paid his bill.
What are we going to do?
Find your wedding gown, Brouin. You will have to wear it for what I plan. You look beautiful, Brouin, the day of our wedding when you wore that gown.
Just think now I must wear it for this.
Never mind. It is the custom. A mother and father in their wedding clothes shall judge an erring son. Fetch two candles from the kitchen, eh? And the three-legged stool, too. There. We shall sit as judge and jury on this side of the fire. There. Now Jacques will sit here opposite us. Now the candles, eh? There now. That gives enough light.
That gun in the chimney corner, Pierre.
Careful, it is loaded.
Pierre, I'm afraid. What are you going to do?
What must be, must be.
But I...
He is coming. It is either very dark or he's very drunk. Let him in, eh?
What's this? Is there going to be a wedding?
Sit down, Jacques.
Maybe this bucket of water will clear his head.
No. Sit down,
Jacques.
Leave me alone. Sit down on the stool there.
Do as your father says.
What is this?
You have sinned against your mother and father. We are sitting in judgment over you.
See here, you can't do this. The law works.
If you make any noise, if you stir, if you don't sit up like a mast on your stool, I will shoot you like a dog.
He means what he says, Jack.
What do you want?
Here is a bit of paper. Look at it. Have you ever seen it?
No.
Look closer. At the handwriting. That is your mother's handwriting, is it not?
I guess so.
Guess so. You know it is.
All right. Yes, yes.
See what it says? For Perrot. It says for little Perrot, who has no mother, whose father is suffering hard times, who needs every centime anyone can offer.
Well.
Your mother wrapped up a Spanish doubloon in that bit of paper, sewed the whole of it into her mattress.
And now, Jacques, the coin is no longer in the mattress.
And I'm supposed to know where the coin is.
Sit still. I found that bit of paper floating on the water when I came in. And then your mother told me of the missing coin. So I went to town. You were at Florence this afternoon, were you not, Jacques?
Well, how did you...
You did not think I knew, did you? But you don't deny it, eh?
All right, I was at Florence.
And you paid your score with a Spanish doubloon.
What if I did? There are other gold coins in the country besides what my mother hides in her mattresses.
Nobody but we three knew it was there.
Well, maybe you took it and hid it, so as to blame me.
Jacques!
Tell you, I did not take the coin.
How came you by the doubloon, then?
I got it north.
How can you prove it?
I tell you, I got it there.
You insist you did not take your mother's coin, eh?
I did not take it.
Can you swear it on your salvation?
I just...
Swear if it's not true. You can repent and mend your ways. There's still time.
Oh, be quiet, old woman. You have always tried to ruin me.
That is another thing to add to your wrongs. Now come to the point.
Will you swear?
Yes!
All right, now. Take a look at this coin, which Florent gave me. The one with which you paid your bill this afternoon. See the cross on the coin where the sardine merchant nicked it before he paid me? Did the coin you picked up in Nantes have that cross marked on it?
Well, I...
Answer me!
No!
Enough talk. I say nothing of all the wrong you've done before. No Cambremer shall die in the marketplace at Croisic. Say your prayers, Jacques, and let us be quick. Father Gabot is coming to hear your confession. He is already coming up the path to the house. Open the door for him, Brouin.
Will you come in now, Father?
Thank you.
Bonjour, Father.
Bonjour.
Jacques is waiting for you.
I am ready, son.
No.
He is waiting for your confession, Jacques.
Speak, Jacques. The crime is worse than concealed. Confess to it. That makes it easier.
Your mother is right, young man. The crime will weigh heavier on your conscience if you do not speak up.
No. If I confess, he'll kill me.
You seem to fear death more than eternal damnation.
I will not do it. I will not do it.
It is no use, Father. I guess he has always been willful, this boy. That has been the curse of this household ever since he was born.
Very well. But you will not be needing me any longer. I have other visits to make, you know.
Of course, Father. Pardon us, sir, for bringing you so far. I meant to give my son a lesson.
Good night, then.
Good night, Father.
Good night, Father.
I Not another word. Get off to bed now.
Better this way. Maybe he'll repent.
No, not him.
Nevertheless, I'm glad you didn't hurt him.
Never mind. This night is not over yet. I shall wait until he is asleep.
What are you going to do?
What must be, must be.
What are you going to do?
You shall see. You shall see.
Who's there? That light, I can't see. Who is it? Father. The room. A strip of silk. Oh, what are you going to do to me?
Pierre! No! Don't do it!
If you will not help me, I will do it alone!
Don't do this! No, let me go!
Gag now. Tie his feet. There.
Where are you taking him? Done with him? Pierre, what? His cap. It fell into the bucket of water. It's floating.
Broke my poor wife's heart. She died within a week, and I was never the same. The thought of what I had done haunts me. I could not fish by day. I could not sleep by night. In the end, my conscience drove me to go to see a priest. He refused me absolution until I promised to tell my story to a justice, which I did. He sentenced me to this, and here I sit. A man under a vow, doomed to watch over the water, to talk with no one, sitting watching, waiting.
From the time-worn pages of the past, we have brought you The Strange Judgment. Bellkeeper, toll the bell.
The Weird Circle, on Tuned to Yesterday from 1944, the 30th program in the NBC syndicated series. You're listening to An Hour of Horror on Tuned to Yesterday. I'm your host, Mark Levonier. And now we'll hear a broadcast that had about 13 million people tuned in to CBS Radio on a Monday night at 8, It's Inner Sanctum. This Armed Forces Radio Service rebroadcast from July 4th, 1949, called Pattern for Fear.
Good evening, friends. This is your host to welcome you through the creaking door into the inner sanctum. Well, went picnicking over the weekend, found a lovely, restful, woodsy place. Oh, it is beautiful, so quiet, you could hear a body drop. And quite a few did. The sun was so hot that one of our party melted to the ground. I'd always wondered over that waxen look about Charlie. Still, it's an ill wind because Charlie had his usefulness at that. Came the deep night, we ran a string through him and played marbles by candlelight.
Tonight's Inner Sanctum mystery, Pattern for Fear, was written by John Robert and stars Everett Sloan in the role of Ludwig, with Cameron Prudhomme as Larrabee.
And now for tonight's ramble in the Never Never Land. We're in the Avalon Lounge, a fashionable metropolitan restaurant. A waiter approaches a table secluded behind an arrangement of tall potted plants. A lone patron sits at the intimate circular table for two.
Your order, sir? If you please, I will take your order.
You know what I want, Ludwig.
Oh.
Caught you unawares, huh?
I had forgotten you. In 5 years, one forgets.
Then I'll reintroduce myself. Captain Larrabee, 9th Precinct. Did you read the morning papers, maybe?
I can recommend our lobster Newberg, the recipe.
A page one headline says that Guthrie Stewart dropped dead of a stroke.
Men die, Captain Larrabee. Every day men die, so that new life...
I thought maybe with Guthrie Stewart dead and gone now, you'd want to talk about things.
You were wrong, Captain Larrabee. I have no wish to talk.
And in that case, I guess I'll just have to make myself comfortable and wait right here.
You are just wasting your time.
I don't think so, Ludwig. You're still suffering something in silence. Guthrie Stewart died without a word. But there's an envelope somewhere now on its way over here to you.
An envelope?
Yes, it's coming by special messenger. The envelope reads, to be delivered on Guthrie Stewart's death. Don't look so befuddled. Stewart's lawyer tipped me off about that envelope 15 minutes ago. I said, I'll wait, Ludwig. What I really mean is, we'll wait.
We wait, the policeman and I, in a grim watch for a messenger soon to come. Captain Larrabee doesn't say it, but I am his prisoner. The restaurant fills up with people, and my mind sinks back 5 years to this same table for two hidden behind the plants. I remember a conversation I overheard by chance, and the terror that came out.
Are you absolutely clear on what you are to do?
The lady murder is my business.
Very well. Repeat my instructions again.
Okay. I'm up there on the terrace outside his bedroom holding a submachine gun.
When the 11:30 train comes around the curve, I shoot to kill.
You empty the machine gun into his bed. Understand? You empty it.
Yeah, you don't just want him killed, huh?
There must be no chance of his surviving this time.
This time? So you tried it before, huh?
Yes. Here. The address is on the slip of paper. Read it, memorize it, and then destroy it.
When do I get paid?
Tomorrow at 6:00, here at this table. I'll leave first.
I watched her leave the restaurant. A heavily veiled woman in black whose face I could not see. A man was to be murdered by a killer for hire. A killer with a cold, businesslike look. I watched him read the address, tear it to bits, drop it into the potted plant, and then push the bits of paper under the earth. When he left, I recovered the bits of paper and pieced them together. The victim was Guthrie Stewart. The address was Havermeyer Heights, in the suburbs just outside the city. A man's life was in my hands. The murder was to be at 11:30. At 10:00, I was in Guthrie Stewart's library warning him. But he was only amused. And his wife, too.
So I'm to be murdered in my bed.
Yes, at 11:30, when the train goes around the curve.
Well, darling, somebody's undoubtedly heard you snore and has finally decided to take drastic action.
Well, you'll make a charming widow, Ellen, if it all comes true.
Oh, but it is true, Mr. Stewart. You joke foolishly. I overheard them plotting. See, I have here the pieces of paper the killer threw in the base of the plant. Look.
That's my name and address, all right. But what does it prove? I'm in the phone book. Anybody could jot down my name and address. Anybody. What did you say your name was again?
Ludwig. Ludwig Heller. I am a waiter at the Avalon Lounge. You think perhaps I wrote your name down? The way you look at me, I see you think I am a crank. Even crazy, perhaps.
Well, frankly, Ludwig, I don't know exactly what to think.
You have no enemies?
Not a one, so far as I know.
I heard her speak. A voice lusting for blood. Your blood, Mr. Stewart. And I saw him. A man without a heart. A cold machine that kills. You are to die, Mr. Stewart. Hey, hear that? The train close to your home, just as I heard her say. Yes, laugh and make jokes, but when the 11:30 train goes around the curve, you are going to die, Mr. Stewart. A man's life was in my hands, but I couldn't make the victim believe in his own approaching death. I went to the local police station to a Captain Larrabee. There, I blurted out the story once more. I waited while he talked to Guthrie Stewart on the telephone.
Yes, I got it. Yes, I understand, Mr. Stewart. Sure thing, I'll do just as you say. Look,
Ludwig Heller.
Look, Heller, I relayed what you told me to Guthrie Stewart.
But I told you it was of no use to do that. He just laughs at it.
He's not laughing anymore. As a matter of fact, he's hopping mad right now, and his missus, too. Hopping mad at you.
At me?
At you. He says if you keep peddling that fish story around, he's going to prefer charges of malicious persecution.
He will prefer charges against me?
Right. In fact, he left it squarely up to me. Now, you're to promise me you'll go about your business, whatever that is. I'm to clap you in the clink for observation.
He thinks I am crazy.
He's sure of it. As a matter of fact, from the looks of you, I'm not sure you're not crazy either. Now, are you going to do the sensible thing?
Yes. Yes, Captain Larrabee. I will go home. The sensible thing. Go home. 11:00. In 30 minutes, a man would die, and his blood would stain all the rest of my life, because I was powerless to save him. The sensible thing. Go home, the police captain had said. But I did not go home. I had to see death look deep into its face. I returned to Havemeyer Heights to wait silently in the shadows on the terrace and watch. He was there too. The killer and his machine gun. A black executioner waiting and ready. But Guthrie Stewart lived. I saw them in the pale moonlight on the terrace. A shaken man and a frightened woman, both in their night clothes, armed and unharmed, seeking the assassin, but afraid to search for him. A moment later, I overheard him on the telephone talking with great excitement to Captain Larrabee.
I don't want any publicity on it, but an attempt was just made on my life. Yes. Someone machine-gunned my bed while the 11:30 went around the curve. What? I wasn't in my bed. A dummy was machine-gunned. I fixed the bedclothes to make it appear that I was in bed, just in case. Just in case that Ludwig person was really telling me something.
I melted into the night like the killer had. Guthrie Stewart was safe. I had been spared his death. The sensible thing now was to go home. But I was to have another moment with the police that night. Walking along a tree-shaded road to a bus stop, a police car suddenly flew toward me, and I was ordered to halt.
You there! Stop!
But I didn't stop. Instead, I ran. I don't know why, but I ran like the wind.
Stop or I'll shoot!
Still, I ran faster than the bullets exploding behind me. I found a neck of woods and hid. I lay face down in the earth for hours, listening to the night. And then, just before morning, I started back to the city, sneaking along the back roads like a fugitive. A curious thing had happened to me. In that night, the deep guilt I was sure the killer must feel had transferred itself to me.
Well, Ludwig the waiter sure got himself one big tip to a slaughter. Poor Ludwig, his errand of mercy got in the bum's rush over the steward. What do you do with a character who laughs at an advance notice of his own death, did somebody ask? Strangle him on the spot, I say. That way he'll positively believe you the next time you're around. Yes, a murder in time certainly saves a lot of wasted breath. Tell a corpse he's dead and he'll never dispute it for a minute. Let's worm back into the story.
The next evening, I went to the Avalon Lounge to my job, as I always did. The police hadn't called, or Guthrie Stewart. It was as if there had been no night before. But there had been a night before. The same two were at their table again, behind the tall palms, as they had agreed to be. The heavily veiled woman in black, and the hired killer. 5 years have passed. But I can remember that conversation I overheard word for word.
Bungler, Stewart is alive.
I sprayed the bed full of holes like a Swiss cheese, maybe 20 bullets.
But he wasn't in the bed.
Someone was. From where I stood, I could see a figure all curled up.
Well, you've got to do it all over again.
Okay, tell me where and how.
Listen carefully. He will be at a shorefront casino in Norwalk tonight. He will motorboat there from Rye and then back the same way. You will wait at his landing pier. When he docks, you will have your second chance.
What do I do? Wait all night at the pier?
No. He always returns home close to midnight.
Which landing pier do I wait at?
Number 19. It's Stewart's privately. The motorboat he drives has a black eagle painted on it.
Will he be alone?
He usually is.
Do you have a face behind that veil?
Don't ever try finding out.
Guthrie Stewart's life was in my hands a second time, as if I had been appointed keeper of his destiny. I was there, too, with the fog curling around me just before midnight on the docks facing the Long Island Sound. I hid, but as before, the executioner stood in the fog and mist, not 20 yards away from me, waiting. There were midnight chimes, and on the water, moving closer, the sound of a motorboat returning to dock. The black eagle on the prow was hardly distinguishable. And then a figure stepped out from the boat to the pier. I saw the killer move and I screamed, "Stuart, look out! There is a gunman!" He was in a heap on the pier, a white figure. I ran to him and kneeled down to see if life had gone completely. "Mr. Stuart! Mr. Stuart!"
"That's not his name, Ludwig.
You are alive!"
"Very much so."
But he..."
"My pilot, Jameson. He got the bullets evidently intended for me. Do you get a pulse?"
"No, I don't think I do, but I'm not experienced in such things."
"Then let me." "He's alive."
I will call an ambulance."
"No, I will. You go home."
"Oh, but
go
I..."
"Go home, Ludwig. It's better that you do, for both of us."
It is better for you that I go home?"
"Yes. I'd like this treated discreetly. I'm an investment broker, quite an important one."
"I know."
"You know?"
"Yes, I know a great deal about you."
"That's odd.
Since I have been given your destiny in my keeping, in my hands, I have familiarized myself with things about you." The next day, a heavy manila envelope came to the restaurant for me from Guthrie Stewart. The letter told me about his investment business, his social position, his fear of scandal and things. Besides the letter, there was a check. A $2,500 check for me. The police didn't come until the next night. Captain Larrabee took me to the station house. Guthrie Stewart was there, and Mrs. Stewart. Captain Larrabee was trying hard to understand things.
"Ludwig, who were you before you began waiting on tables at the Avalon, and before you started to overhear murder plots?"
"I was just myself in the world."
"Oh, quit that kind of talk. I meant, what were you?"
"A waiter. I have always been a waiter."
"Do you have a mental history somewhere? If you have, better talk up. Might help you out of a jam, being mentally irresponsible." "Okay, don't talk up. Mrs. Stewart."
"Oh, yes, Captain Larrabee."
"On this sheet, I have some of the speeches written. The speeches that Ludwig claims he's overheard that woman make. Now, please read them in your own natural speaking voice. And read them like a woman bent on getting somebody murdered."
"Captain Larrabee, you dare..."
"Oh, look, Mrs. Stewart, no dramatics, please. I'm just doing a job. Now read them, please."
"Very well. You empty the machine gun into his bed. Understand, you empty it. There must be no chance of his surviving this time. Oh, Captain Larrabee, must I go on?"
No, that's enough. Is it the same voice, Ludwig, or almost the same voice?"
"No. The voices are entirely different."
"You can say that positively?"
"Yes. Also, the other woman was taller and much stouter."
"Okay, that's that. And I'm not surprised. I'm sorry, Mrs. Stewart."
"You should be."
"Put your hands out, Ludwig."
Put my hands out?"
"That's right. Bracelets for you. Ludwig Heller, you're under arrest for attempted murder."
"I was sent to a mental ward for observation. There were tests, doctors examining me for weeks, and questions. And one day again, Captain Larrabee came to question me once more."
"I found these certificates in your room, Ludwig. They're yours, aren't they?"
"Yes, they are mine."
"Common stock certificates in the Guthrie Stewart Investment Company. 50 of them worth $100 apiece on their face. That's $5,000. Where'd you get $5,000 to invest in stocks?
It was my life savings.
From waiting on tables?
Yes, from waiting on tables.
The stocks took a drop, a big drop. These certificates are worth about 20 cents on the dollar today.
I know that, Captain Larrabee.
Yes, a bear market did it, some people think. A lot of big fellows squeezed a lot of little fellows, maybe. Is that how you figure your life savings were wiped out, maybe?
Maybe.
Guthrie Stewart's market operations cost you your life savings. Isn't that how you figured it? Isn't that why you came around telling him his life was in danger? To terrify him? Get money out of him for saving his life? Maybe even kill him in the end, anyhow?
I am tired, Captain Larrabee. I want to sleep now.
You're not going to answer?
I wish only to sleep now. Doctor!
Okay, Stahl. Don't confess you toted that machine gun up to that terrace. That it was you firing away on that pier. Play tired, play sick. Even beat the rap that way. But you'll still face charges for extorting $2,500. We've got you dead to rights on that.
No, Captain. I sent the $2,500 back. 5 years ago, I went from the hospital to jail for months without bail while the police tried to build a case. In the end, there was no evidence and I was freed. Freed to be watched through the years. Like tonight here in the Avalon Lounge. Guthrie Stewart is dead. But Captain Larrabee sits with me as we wait for a messenger to come.
Ludwig Heller?
Yes, I am Ludwig Heller.
I got an envelope for you. Sign here, please.
I'll take that letter, Ludwig. It's from the grave. The envelope reads, to Ludwig Heller on my death. Guthrie Stewart. Now let's see what's inside. You know what's inside, maybe, Heller?
Yes, I think I know.
In a second, we'll both know. Doesn't say much.
Does it say, thank you, Ludwig, from the bottom of my heart?
Yes. Yes, it says exactly that, word for word. Guthrie Stewart thanking you? What for?
I have here in my pocket a letter for you, Captain. It was sent to me 5 years ago with a check that I returned. Guthrie Stewart told me to give this letter to you anytime I wish. I wish now. Here, Captain.
Dear Captain Larrabee, Ludwig Heller's story is the truth, the whole truth. The woman plotting my murder is Ellen, my wife.
Not out of hatred, Captain, but out of sickness. A mind that has never been strong. She lives in darkness, and I, too, because of her. If I can keep this secret, I can live and perhaps help her. If Ludwig Heller can endure for me and carry my burden, even for a while, Ellen will be hospitalized and we both will hope.
If Ludwig Heller has the strength.
Now you understand, Captain Larrabee?
Those stock certificates I found in your room.
We put them there for you to find, Captain. Guthrie Stewart and I.
You did that? You took the kind of rap you did for Guthrie Stewart?
For a fellow human in distress, yes.
You let yourself be slapped around, hospitalized, jailed, hounded day and night for years, all for an absolute stranger?
For a reward, Captain. A great reward. Ellen Stewart was pronounced cured 6 months ago. I am not too young in years, but it has fallen to me, a mere waiter on tables, to bring a new life into the world. The life of Ellen Stewart.
Ludwig.
Yes, Captain Larrabee?
Let's shake hands.
Stop in at the Avalon Lounge, anybody, for the town's best service a la carte. Love that Ludwig. A man with a heart of gold and a terrifying knack for business. Other people's business. Big-hearted Ludwig borrowed Guthrie Stewart's troubles and almost lost his own interest in living. Oh, that suggests a moral. I overheard this one while eavesdropping on a short-order cook in a chop suey restaurant. Fool who not mind own business always get the business.
Inner Sanctum was heard in the United States over CBS, the Columbia Broadcasting System, and has been rebroadcast for servicemen and women overseas through the facilities of the United States Armed Forces Radio Service, the voice of information and education.
Inner Sanctum, on Tuned to Yesterday from the 4th of July, 1949 on CBS. And so closes this hour of horror on Tuned to Yesterday. Be sure to be with us next time for more great programs from radio's yesteryear. Until our next hour together, I'm Mark Livonier. It's been a pleasure.